You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Karsibayev.
On this episode, we host Charles Onstad, Chief Technology Officer of SAIC. Charles is responsible for driving SAIC's long-term technology strategy, which emphasizes fostering a culture of innovation across the company, developing and enhancing innovation capabilities, partnerships with startup accelerators and universities, and research and development. His efforts span a broad portfolio of technology capabilities, including information technology, training and simulation, advanced analytics, hardware and platform integration, and logistics and supply chain. We hope you enjoy this episode. Charles, welcome to the Ivy Podcast. Please tell us more about the services that SAIC offers and your role within the organization.
Absolutely. SAIC is a technology integrator, and our services span a really broad array of things that we do. Now, the vast majority of our business is with the United States government, and probably 99% of our revenue comes through the United States government. We also do a lot of work for state and local governments as well. And you know, we perform the whole spectrum of IT services, so everything from consulting to managed services. But we also provide training services, for example, and that's everything from classroom training to virtual training. So, for example, we actually have two video game studios at SAIC, and we use those to develop what we call serious games that are used for training soldiers and people who do missions, you know, across government. And then in addition to that, we also do complex systems engineering for like vehicles and weapons and command and control systems. And then we also do have significant capabilities in space. So we do everything from systems engineering and integration, modeling and simulation work, and mission assurance for a lot of different space organizations across across the government. So my job as CTO of SAIC is to help the company maintain focus on the long-term technologies and to foster a culture of innovation within the company. So I manage our research and development portfolio. I drive our technology strategy and vision, and then I run, you know, a variety of innovation programs across the company.
So sounds very exciting. Thank you for providing a little more insight about the company and your role within the organization. How long have you been with the company?
Yeah, so I've been with the company for 25 years. So I joke that I was born and raised. I came in actually at an entry level position as a Unix system administrator, and then since then I've worked in a variety of different roles. Prior to the CTO role that I've been in now for about 3 years, I ran all of our services in cyber, cloud, and data science. So we had an organization that delivered those services in those three areas horizontally across all of our customer markets.
Wow, so you've probably seen everything that, you know, the company has gone through in terms of transformation and any other initiatives that have gone on through the organization. That's very exciting. From your perspective, what practical recommendations can you provide to other executives, a lot of them who are listeners of the Ivy Podcast, and something that has worked well for you recently as you lead the enterprise technology organization during these times, such as COVID? What were some of the valuable lessons learned during this period have been so far for you?
Yeah, so working remotely in a very distributed fashion depends on technology for sure. So I think one key thing is, you know, having a solid IT infrastructure that can support people connecting remotely to do work on a daily basis. Fortunately, SAIC had been moving in this direction for several years in an effort to increase work from home, as well as we do have a lot of employees who work on customer sites anyway. So that because of that, then they always are accessing SAIC resources remotely. So for us, it actually was not a big deal when we basically flipped over to where everybody is working teleworking. But that's because we had, you know, made those investments in the infrastructure part of that. What we're seeing with a lot of our government customers is that many of them didn't really prepare in that way. So there's a lot of need right now across government to help them update their infrastructure to support it. But, you know, the technology part is important, but I think more importantly, there is the people aspect of this. And, you know, it does require deliberate action to stay in touch with your people. You got to make sure they understand that the company is there for them and provide resources to them to help them cope with the stresses related to the pandemic. And those stresses can be everything from, we've had a death in one of our facilities from COVID, and so the team was impacted by that. The stresses could be just from the isolation people feel being, not being able really to go anywhere, and especially for people who live alone. So I think it starts with, one-on-one interactions between leaders and their employees, and making sure that you're checking in with them, making sure they're doing okay, and making sure that they have what they need to do their job. And that, to me, is probably one of the most important actions that we can do. One other thing that SAIC did, because we do have a training and human performance business line, our human performance folks launched something called the COVID Coping Corner, which is an internal resource that gives our employees, training and strategies on how to deal with stress management, how to practice mindfulness, things they can do to help improve sleep. A lot of day-to-day activities they can perform to help manage the stress associated with this, environment and scenario that we're in right now. And finally, I would say it requires that you rely more on confirming intentions and conversations, since you won't really have the body language to help. And I can say for sure, my organization's challenges is that we've seen a massive explosion in the number of meetings that are being scheduled, and to the point that it's just basically wall-to-wall meetings, and it's a very common issue across the company right now. And I think that's because you don't have the random hallway conversations that can happen, and there's not the ability to linger after meetings to talk to someone about something in particular. And so one of the things I'm going to try, a little bit of a culture hack, I'm just going to stop scheduling meetings that are really about just trying to chat with somebody, which is what a lot of these are, and deliberately move more to texting and just calling people. And I'm hoping that, that frees up time on other people's calendars, but hopefully they'll start doing the same and free up time on our calendar, so we can get back to having a little bit more flexibility in how we interact on a day-to-day basis.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty sure a lot of companies can definitely relate to what you're going through, and thank you for sharing some of those insights. Shift gears a little bit from a standpoint of advanced technologies, such as RPA, AI, machine learning, they're reinventing software engineering as a whole. How do you think these trends will impact your industry from innovation standpoint? And what are your thoughts on best strategies to adopt such technologies?
Yeah, so these are clearly absolutely transformational technologies, and they provide the potential for many benefits in the services that we deliver. So the way we look at this is, we have services that we deliver to customers, and there are lots of opportunities for us to automate the services that we deliver, and then we capture a lot of data in the process of delivering those services. So for example, we do a lot of cybersecurity services and data center and cloud computing operations. There's a lot of operational data that we capture in that process that we can analyze using advanced analytics and AI techniques to help gain insights. So for example, recently we've been looking at applying AI technologies to helping us optimize cloud workloads, just as an example. And on the other aspect, because we are an IT services company that delivers a lot of these capabilities back to the government, a lot of it is helping our clients adopt and effectively use these technologies, not only for internal IT purposes, but also in the mission. And so that's a major focus of the company. And I think the other thing is they do provide potential threats to the United States. So some of our adversary nations are, much more aggressively applying these technologies than we are. And I think we need to step up as a country on the application side of these technologies, in addition to the leading research that we currently do in artificial intelligence, for example. And, I know a lot of people are concerned about the government in particular making use of artificial intelligence and machine learning for military and law enforcement purposes. And there are some, very real concerns about that. For one, the maturity of these technologies, and then the application potentials, can also be concerning. But I think it's really critical to recognize that, you know, adversaries and criminals are also leveraging these same technologies. And if the government doesn't master their use and application, it definitely has the potential to adversely impact human rights, you know, our sense of justice and privacy and our way of life, because, you know, it would give them, say, a technological advantage over how we carry out day-to-day business. When we work with clients, I think, you know, a lot of times when we talk with clients about artificial intelligence, what they really, it turns out they really want right now is more automation. So the RPA is proving out at the moment to be the more relevant in terms of solving very concrete problems. We, of course, are using AI and solving some other problems, but I'd say RPA is what a lot of people really have in mind when they're asking for it. And I think the key thing is that, you know, the government is very risk averse and is not a, you know, we'll say early adopter of technologies for the most part. And so one way that we help, you know, government agencies mitigate the risk associated with new technology adoption is by helping them also embrace, you know, agile, say, software development methodologies and help them, you know, try these technologies out on a specific problem in short sprints so that they can, you know, do an evaluation to figure out, you know, whether a particular algorithm is going to be useful in a particular application. And this more incremental approach helps de-risk the whole enterprise around how you go about adopting these kinds of advanced technologies.
Right. And I would imagine that, especially when it comes to government, you know, these advanced technology, the whole subject is, you know, pretty sensitive. And that's, you know, that's interesting to hear how you guys are approaching that. We ourselves, you know, at ProSource IT, we on a smaller scale, but we do help other companies, you know, implement and leverage these technologies such as RPA. And we see a lot of the need for those pilot testing and, you know, incremental sprints and something shorter in duration to really understand the benefits and how things work before adopting that through, you know, company-wide. So I can definitely relate to some of the things that that you were just talking about. With so many companies going through downsizing, furloughs, and other impacts through, you know, through these times, what has worked well for you when it comes to employee motivation and keeping the performance levels up as they were prior to these times?
Yeah, so I think a couple, you know, there's a few things. One is because SAC is a large company, and we are highly distributed to begin with people all over the country. And the way about which we do a lot of our innovation, we've been doing this in a fairly distributed fashion for some time. So in some respects, from my perspective, from where I sit, you know, in terms of driving innovation capability, it hasn't had a huge impact on us. But when we look more broadly at the company and, you know, a lot of our employees continue to work every day remotely for the government. The government mission is essential. And but we do have some employees who are being impacted, you know, because they can't go on to site, for example, and that inhibits their ability to actually do work on a day-to-day basis. So I've been really proud of some of the things that SAC has been doing to show our workforce that we care, and even for employees that aren't able to work. And so, you know, some keys to the way we've been approaching it is having a lot of flexibility in work schedules, and you know, helping employees with finding ways to engage them on internal projects, for example, for employees who are, say, would otherwise be furloughed, help them find internal projects they can work on, and also invest in training to build up their skills. Another thing is the company opened a leave donation program so that people across the company could donate their accumulated comprehensive leave, and the corporation matched that up to $1 million. So actually within, I think, a week, we had over $1 million in contributed leave donations, and then the company matched that. So now there's a huge pool of leave available for employees that don't have any remaining comprehensive leave, and they can take advantage of that as a way to bridge the time between now and when they are able to actually go back into work.
Wow.
And then looking for other things like, you know, finding ways to cover diagnostic services and so on. So yeah, I think that's key, is, you know, looking for ways that the company can show the workforce that we care and that we're doing the things that we need to do. And then the other part is also helping out in the communities in which we do business. And, you know, for example, we have a lot of 3D printing capability across the company. And so we've repurposed a lot of those printers to produce shields and bands that you know local business then used to create personal protective equipment for their communities. And also, you know, I think the other big area is you know, hunger and providing food to people who may have been adversely impacted by this in those communities. And so SAIC's pledged over $500,000 to support food banks across the country. And then we're also encouraging our employees to contribute in the ways that they can. So I think it's, you know, a lot about how do you, you know, give back to the communities in this time when there's a lot of need, and then also help employees recognize that, you know, we're doing everything we can to take care of them throughout this pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Very inspiring. To take that a little bit further on that same subject, when it comes to innovation, especially during times like this, we all know Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where it's, you know, safety and those things come first. What strategies and methodologies do you deploy that help you come up with innovative ways to solve certain problems for your products and services? And how do you also motivate your teams to continue on, you know, leveraging innovation as you guys have been prior to, you know, these times?
Yeah. Yeah, so we have a few innovation programs in the company that that are designed specifically to help employees gain, let's say, broader visibility in the company, as well as to connect with other people who are doing innovative work. And we've been able to run those programs even in the midst of this COVID pandemic. So, for example, we just recently closed selection of research fellowships. So we identified about 22 research fellowships. These are small funded projects to explore advanced technology applications in a lot of different areas. And in the applications that that you know that came across in this year's batch, you know, is everything from you know, AI is obviously a huge one. We have one project around quantum computing. We have a project on digital engineering and applying that to solve you know, problems related to how you optimize design of say a new type of armor, for example. And that gives them the ability to spend some time working on ideas that otherwise are not necessarily directly related to the job they have. And then at the end of the year, we'll you know, we have an annual technology conference internally that we call T3, and it's techniques, tools, and technology, where they will show off the outputs of their research fellowships. And these kind of innovation programs are really important because we don't necessarily, in this particular case in research fellowships, ask them to, let's say, align the research to the business itself, but more, you know, what is it that they're passionate about that they want to explore? And but the payoff on these things can be huge. And I think a great example is we had a research fellowship about 4 years ago where one of our software engineers got really interested in microservices and wanted to look at how we could leverage microservice architectures to solve, you know, problems with application modernization in the government. And that started out as a small research fellowship project, and then he demonstrated it at this T3 event I mentioned, and that got the attention of the person who is the head of our software practice area. And then as a result of those conversations, we ended up investing you know, research and development funding in it, which is a much higher level of funding to actually build that into a capability. And you know, 4 years later, we have a very robust tool set for how we help customers analyze applications, modernize them, and pick the best migration paths depending on, you know, their starting point. And that was key on winning, you know, a major contract that we have with the Air Force called Cloud One, which is about a $700 million contract. And, you know, one of the key things that helped us win that was the output of a project that started, you know, in a research fellowship 4 years ago. So I think it's a great example of how, you know, we leverage the internal expertise and creativity that our employees have, and then find ways to harness it into meaningful solutions for our customers.
That's very exciting, and thank you for providing that example. Especially, seems like you guys are definitely not slowing down any of the, you know, the innovation related projects within the organization. Where I, you know, through a lot of companies that I work with as clients, it seems that there is more emphasis, more, and it I guess also depends on the nature of the business, but not slowing down on the innovation initiatives. Seems you know, like a very important initiative within the organization, not only to keep the motivations up, but it's also puts the employees in a different mindset that, you know, in these critical times, it's also important to think outside the box and think of creative ways to solve certain problems. So that's very exciting to hear what you guys are doing.
Yeah. In fact, we have another process where we just opened the call for papers for, again, our T3 conference. And that call for papers is asking people to submit abstracts for innovative work that they've done with their customers on contract. Mm-hmm. And, you know, SAIC has a broad portfolio. So we actually have a lot of research and development contracts that we're doing R&D for the government. And a lot of really interesting things come out of that. And then even on, more operational focused contracts, like a managed services contract, you know, we'll have employees that will invent, a new algorithm to help optimize delivery of service. And this process gives them the ability to really take a step back and think about the fact that what they're doing is innovation. I think that's one of the challenges is a lot of times employees hear this term innovation and they don't really know and connect it up to the things they're actually doing. Because I think a lot of employees think of it as they're just doing the job that we hired them to do. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times they're actually inventing things and creating really interesting ways of doing things that nobody else has really done. And we want to find avenues to get them to surface that so that people across the company can become aware of it. And so that's one way we do that is through the T3 conference. So yeah, we just opened the call for papers. And again, you know, even though we're in the middle of the COVID pandemic, we don't want to slow down on that front. And that conference is typically done in person, but we started live streaming a couple of years ago to reach employees in a lot of the remote locations that are not in the DC area. And because of that, you know, we now have a way to actually run that entire conference virtually if we end up having to. It's in the fall, so I'm hoping that by then, you know, this will be behind us. But if it's not, you know, we already have a plan for how we can basically do that conference virtually. So,
right.
So yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, definitely sounds very exciting. And I love the fact what you had mentioned that these innovation programs, you guys don't necessarily tie it to the specific functional areas of where employees operate, but you let, you know, provide that autonomy for employees to really engage in something that they really want to do. So I'm pretty sure, you know, that's a major contributor to some of the success that you guys have been seeing through this initiative.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, for example, when we do these call for papers and research fellowships, we get applications, you know, not only from the places you'd expect, like the lines of business and people working on technology programs for the government, but we also get and have awarded research fellowships for people in human resources and in our communications department. For example, we had a person in our communications department that built a UAV of his own design as a part of one of these fellowships. And we had a person in our human resources department that was looking at how to apply algorithms to address some questions that come up on a daily basis in human resources. So there's it's really interesting that when you give people the avenue, you can find you've got people in all parts of the company that really try to stay on this bleeding edge of technology where they can, and maybe the day job doesn't really let them explore those concepts, but this gives them that avenue. So it's really exciting to see it when that happens.
Right. Absolutely. I'm actually, you know, I definitely want to follow up with you and stay in touch to see the outputs of your guys's, you know, the innovation program. It sounds very exciting. I want to shift gears a little bit to talk more around talent acquisition and attracting the top talent and how do you guys go about that when hiring for SAIC for candidates that interview with you. First of all, do you tend to get creative with your interviews? And if so, what does the interview format would look like? And what do you look for in some of the responses that you hear from the candidates?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm particularly creative in how I do interviews, but I'm a big fan of situational questions that help assess how an employee would handle different situations. And, you know, skills are very important. And so for, you know, roles where there's a key need for skills, you know, we'll use assessments and things like that. But what I'm also, and in some ways I think is more important, especially in technology, is finding people who really love to learn, love to try new things and find ways to make it add value to the business. And also finding people who behave with integrity. It's so critical, especially with the work we do in cybersecurity and in national security, that We have people who live and adhere to high ethical standards. So what I'm looking for is that candidate that not only has the skills, but has all these other things. And if I can find somebody with all of that, then, you know, we've got someone we definitely want to hire. So I try to use questions that will help me understand their journey and how they got to where they are in their career and how they approach innovation, and then how they would handle a variety of different situations they might encounter in our work environment, just to get a sense of how they are as a person and how they would likely operate in our environment.
That's great. And thank you for sharing some of the insights and practices that you go through these interviews. What are some of the most in-demand skill sets, and those that are hardest to find for you in your industry? And what strategies do you deploy to attract that type of skill set to your teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably we have a lot of the same list as a lot of companies. Clearly people who are experts in cloud computing and cloud solutions are hard to find. People with skills in emerging technologies like blockchain and data science, data analytics, artificial intelligence, those are also hard to find. And there's a lot of competition for people with those skills. So, it makes it, even when you can get candidates, you're almost always in competition with maybe one or two other companies that are also bidding on that same candidate. We also do a lot of complex systems engineering. And so we do have a lot of people that have very specialized skills that that we need to hire. And I think one other thing that makes it really challenging for us in particular is that we have a huge percentage of our workforce. I want to say 40%+ of our workforce have security clearances, and security clearances are not easy to come by these days because the government has really been clamping down on how you go about getting security clearances, and it takes a long time to get them. So, a lot of times we're not only looking for I call them the unicorn that has, say, really good data analytics skills, but we're looking for the unicorn that has that and happens to also have a security clearance, which means that, when they come over to SAC, it'll be a lot easier for them to reobtain that clearance to work on the work. So we have, our approach to attracting talent is, we do use a lot of social media, and we historically have gone to a lot of recruiting events at different universities to make people aware of the capabilities of the company. And we want to also find ways that give us that ability to really locate and engage top talent. And so I think one of the more creative things we've done in the past year is we actually sponsored an esports team that is associated with Tennessee Tech University in Tennessee. And by attaching ourselves to this esports team, it really told the students of Tennessee Tech that, we're not only a company that's a technology company, but we really understand kind of where people coming into the workforce are at and the things that they like to do and the things that they enjoy doing. And then part of it is building rapport and relationships with people. Because there is a lot of competition for this, the same talent, it's critical that our interactions with them are positive and that, they, even if they choose to go to a different company, that in the future they may still think positively of SAIC should the opportunity come back up to, say, hire them and bring them into the company. I know the HR department is very, and the recruiting team is very big on automation. They try to automate a lot of the processes around how they identify and contact candidates so they can, spend more time really talking to people as opposed to doing a lot of the back end processes. And then I think also it's just, the mission of SAIC, we do so many things in government that I think, one of the major things that is attractive about working for SAIC is that we work on things that really make a difference at a national level. And, we help the intelligence community. We help the Department of Defense. We help major federal civilian agencies carry out their missions every day. And those can span everything from helping NASA run their networks to, really solving very difficult problems for DARPA. So that kind of breadth of mission is another way in which we're able to attract talent. And the fact that people can come into the company in one part on one mission, say, and then decide, hey, I want to go help on this other with this other agency and help them solve some problems. And that flexibility to move around into different mission spaces and understand how different parts of the government operate and help bring value to that to those government agencies in carrying out their responsibilities, I think is a major motivator for a lot of our people.
That's great. And one example that really stood out to me is your guys' sponsorship of the esports team. That's definitely creative. And I can see how that definitely one of the most effective strategies to attract a very niche skill set, especially in, you know, technology and software development space. Thank you for sharing that. Charles, last but not least, curious, what are you currently reading and what is one book that you always recommend to others and why?
Yes, I like to read. I read a lot and I like to read a lot of different books at the same time. I think a lot of folks I know really prefer to read one at a time and they don't start another one until they're done with the one they're reading. But I like to have several of them going at the same time because I like finding the connections between things even when they're not, let's say, really related. And so I read both fiction and nonfiction. Right now, I'd probably mention, I have a guilty pleasure right now in that I'm reading Stephen King's The Stand again. So this I read this back in high school, and of course it's all about a virus that is actually far more deadly than COVID, and how you know it's this dystopian future and society kind of has to recreate itself as a result of all of the mayhem that comes from this virus. And I'm a big fan of Stephen King, and I haven't read this book in a long time, and given the situation, I thought it'd be kind of fun to read that. Other books I'm reading right now, one that I think is very fantastic in a lot of ways is called AI Superpowers by Kai-Fu Lee. It's great in a lot of different ways. I think for me, the thing that is fascinating is really understanding the innovation engine that is in China, and understanding how they're, so rapidly growing their engineering capabilities. And he provides a lot of good cultural insight into what really drives Chinese people in terms of how they approach innovation and what they're motivated by, and helps us really understand, the kinds of technology futures that they're envisioning. I think that we have a lot to learn about innovation in general from Chinese. But I also think about this in the context of the U.S. government, which is, we need to maintain technological superiority, over other countries, and we don't want to be in a position where we get behind on the innovation curve. And I think, one area where the Chinese are potentially ahead of us, for example, in AI, is they spend a lot more time on the actual practical application of the technologies, and less time on the research side of it. And whereas here we tend to spend a lot more on the research side and less on the practical application. And that's a shift we've got to take. So I think that's a book I'm reading right now that's really fantastic. Another one, which I just finished, but I highly recommend, is called The Order of Time by Carlo Rovelli. And it's a beautifully written book on time and how modern physics really upends everything that we think about time on a daily basis. I think, on a daily basis, we have this operational notion of what time is, and what he's done is really written a beautiful book on how physics is really showing that everything we really think about time is just basically not correct. So it's a great book. Highly recommend it. I'd say the book I've been recommending the most recently is called Homo Deus. It's a very thought-provoking book about the future, and given current tech trends in AI and analytics and robotics and biotechnology, the basic idea is that, as a result of these technologies, we may be in the process of creating the next generation, evolution of human beings into superhumans or godlike humans, as the title of the book. It's really fascinating to think through the implications of a lot of these technologies and how applying them can, in fact, give us superhuman powers in a lot of ways. And to some extent, some of these things are already happening today. And some of the advances that have happened, for example, in prosthetics with arms that not only can be controlled by the brain, but actually, I've seen some examples of where they're learning how to actually feel, which is a major problem of using artificial limbs, is the fact that they don't provide any feeling. I think, you know, one might not agree with everything that's in the book. You know, for example, he does suggest that, humans are algorithms. I'm not in the camp that humans are algorithms, but it's either way, it's definitely stimulating and thought provoking about the future. And I think it's, you know, it's a must read book in the sense of what does it mean for the business you're in, and what are these technologies going to enable people to do that are relevant in your business or your mission. And this book does a great job, I think, of stimulating that.
Charles, I can't thank you enough for all of your valuable insights and all of the information that you had shared with us today. It was great catching up with you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.